So episode five. Wow. We're getting through them.
Weeks have flown by, haven't
Aren't
this?
they?
Are we episode five?
Yeah, episode five. This will be with Pip, our gorgeous guests.
Hello.
Welcome, Pip.
Hi.
I'm just going to give you a quick introduction because it needs a fabulous introduction because obviously this beautiful life is just so flamboyant and you were one of my patients first before, obviously, the whole RuPaul's Drag Race come in.
I was, yeah.
And just watching you grow has been beautiful, Pip. It really, really has. I just want to say, firstly, a huge congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Two, just the influence that you've had and just being such a gorgeous personality to come out of Liverpool is just so good. And let's give Ciao Bella a little.
We've got Bambino here as well. He's my, do you know the way people are, you know, Pokemon?
Yeah.
He's like my Pokemon. He just comes everywhere with me.
Ah.
Oh. But unlike a Pokemon, he doesn't do anything. He just sort of sits there, just sleeping the whole time.
And then literally doesn't lose lives either.
Doesn't lose lives. No. Well, we've had an agreement, actually. He said he's going to live forever. And I was like, thank God. Can't deal with.
He's on the NAD.
It's funny, I am quite morbid because when I first got Bambino, the first thing I thought of was, I need to have something in like memory of him just forever. Do you know what I mean? I need to document it. I've got another sister. My eldest sister is, she's the same. She'll go to like someone's birthday and be looking at the pictures of them like, oh, isn't this really nice? Wonder which one they'll use at the funeral. And I'm like, oh, you're sick in the head. But when I first got him, I was like, I need to get a tattoo. So it was the first one I got. It looks just like him now. He's trapped forever in my skin, in my forearm.
Well, he's adorable.
He's a good boy.
So I'm guessing he's been on a little journey with you as well, Pip.
He has. Well, kind of the reason, yeah. So when I first got him, I was on a big tour of the UK. I just got back from filming Celebrity Coach Trip in Portugal. That was airing. And then 2 weeks after that finished airing, started a 42-day tour of the UK.
Wow.
So I wanted a little tiny dog that could come and meet me in Glasgow, like Liverpool, Nottingham, wherever I was.
And just that, I think it's that companionship, isn't it? Because I can imagine, obviously we'll start from the beginning of the moment, but I can imagine touring like that and being thrown into this huge celebrity lifestyle to be on tour nonstop. Must be like so lonely at times, Pip.
It was crazy. And like, I have to remember, I went from working in an office as a civil servant, doing drag before that anyway, that was kind of like my hobby. That was my, you know, I could clock off and go to, it was usually London. I was working in Liverpool in an office. Mm-hmm. And then I would clock off on a Friday, get the train to London and then be performing, you know, a few hours later. So I've been doing drag for about 2 years before I applied for Drag Race because it had only just come over to the UK. It was my first time applying. Yeah. Season one had happened. Drag Race UK season one was massive. It was like the first outside of the American franchise. So I think there was a lot of eyes on it going, right, mm-hmm. Well, how, you know, what's it going to look like? How well going to be? Will RuPaul be a part of it? And then lo and behold, she was. So I applied for season two, magically got on, and then had to quit my office job because of the time constraints of filming this TV show. But uniquely, our season, when we were filming it, halfway through, the country went into lockdown. So we were the last TV show. This is true. We were the last TV show in the UK still in production. EastEnders had finished.
Wow.
Coronation Street had finished. And you know, that's like, yeah, that's like the cockroach of TV. You can't kill it. So yeah, we got pulled into the meeting afterwards and they were like, you all need to go home. Because when you're filming, they confiscate your phone. You don't have access to the outside world. You, when you're having your own downtime, you're in a hotel room and they even put tape across the hotel room to make sure that you haven't come out in the night.
Wow, so that's quite like...
We were already practicing our own lockdown.
Yeah, absolutely. And that probably prepared you for it a little bit. If you think about it, yeah.
We got about half an hour in the mornings before, I mean, and like, you know, 6:30 a.m. to put the TV on in the hotel room to actually see. And we could see this thing that was in. It was like coronavirus, this coronavirus, that. We didn't really know what it was yet. And then we get to set. And the production, because they wanted to keep us ahead in the game. So they were like, don't worry, if anything mad happens, we will tell you about it. So we had 2 weeks of just them kind of saying, don't worry, like, you know, your family and friends, everyone's alive, everyone's fine, just doing their own thing. Just keep your head in the game.
And that's crazy, isn't it? Because obviously when you watch that series, you would not think that obviously COVID was going on because you're just so immersed in it at the time. And it's just so like that program in itself, it's just so flamboyant and just watching everyone on
it's a tonic, it's happy juice. It's the one thing I think it's one of the few TV shows, reality TV shows where people say we go and we clock off, we put Drag Race on because that's just the bit where you can lose yourself in it.
Yeah.
And for that, we went through real trauma because we had to wait 7 months between starting the TV show and then wrapping it up. 7 months of just pure lockdown. People's job insecurity because they were. I was lucky. I went back to my good old civil service job, so I was okay for having that regular income. A lot of them just went back and they couldn't perform. None of the places were open, so they were just trapped. Knowing this TV show is about to come out and it's going to be life changing. I'm going to be world famous in the world of drag, but for now we're just kind of stuck at home, broke. Probably, going into savings or whatever.
How did you go from being from such a high to obviously having all them like amazing people around you, knowing kind of what the TV program was about to catapult you into, to then going into like, because lockdown was hard enough for most people. Just working normal jobs. And especially for me, because obviously I was working in a clinic, constantly seeing people, to then kind of nothing. I was like, oh, what's happened? But from going like from such a high then to that, how did that affect? Did it affect your mental health? Because then to come out of it and then go back into, it's like a roller coaster, isn't it?
It really was. I think there was so many ebbs and flows, and there was highs and lows that we were. So while we were, because a lot of it was, we were just sat at home. And the thing about the Drag Race fandom as well, they will hear a rumor and then in some small corner of the internet, and then everyone will latch onto that. And then next thing, you're getting an influx of messages going, are you on Drag Race? Are you going to be on Drag Race? And you're thinking, no, because I've signed the NDA. If I'm not allowed to talk about it, how do people know these things? Although I did tell my mum, and she had to sign an NDA as well. My mum was the person who was going, no, I'm not going to tell us all. She stood with a megaphone on Morrison's McGull telling everyone. I had to scold her a few times. I'm like, mother, I remember actually I sat her down and said to her, mother, you could ruin this opportunity.
Pure reverse psychology.
She was like, okay, I won't tell anyone. She probably told like another 10 people, but then capped it at that.
I remember you coming in, you were so proud as punch with your t-shirt.
And with the merch.
And I was like, oh, look at my merch. I'm ahead of the tea.
It was like all that. It was an opportunity while we were in lockdown to kind of, get all your T's crossed and your I's dotted before you go back and finish the whole thing. But the reality of it was we were just sat in lockdown. We weren't allowed to talk about it, and we weren't allowed to be celebrated in that way. That it's kind of like when you're filming it, you get this mad rush of adrenaline and you're surrounded by these other queens as well that are like, oh, I can't wait to go on the tours, and I can't wait, I'm going to drop an album, and I'm going to do music, I'm going to do film and TV, and everyone's got these dreams. And we were like, yeah. And then it was just like halted.
Yeah.
I was like, no, you've got to go back to the real world and just, you're just going to have to chill.
Wow.
And we didn't know it was going to be for 7 months, but it took. We were like, we actually got told by producers, we'll probably see you in about 2 weeks' time.
And it just was, because no one knew, did they?
And I could tell, they told us afterwards, but the producers were very, very scared that they didn't know the outcome of it. And obviously they've spent however much money on this TV show at that point. Would they just have to scrap it? And then for us, we're sat there going, oh, do we just have to scrap this? Is this our careers down the pan?
Yeah. So take us back to the beginning. Take us to where kind of this whole journey. Obviously, you were younger in school. Tell us about how you kind of come into the arts and Sister was born, because Sister's just, she's the best. Some of them outfits and them looks, I just think, wow.
Oh, thank you.
Incredible.
I think, I've always been... what I would say, a creative. I've always kind of, I enjoyed literature. I liked music growing up. I remember my mum was the one who taught me how to draw. My nan taught me how to sew. We've got friends of family, all women as well. I was like almost like 95% raised by women. It was my nan, my aunties, the family friends. They were all women. And then we got a dog. She was a girl. Everyone, I was just surrounded by women. I've got two sisters. My dad worked away at sea, so we didn't see him as often. So then he'd come home and he was the 5% male that I'd have, and then he'd disappear again. So it was all, it was just like a really nice way to grow up. Yeah, went to school, kind of like wasn't mad academic. I've always just been like a C grade. I know this because I found my report card. My mum's moving house. So she was like, you need to get in your loft and get rid of all your crap. So we went up there. I was just, this has been the last few days. In fact, I've got a cold because I've been in the loft so much, breathing all the time. But one of the things I was always good at English literature, and I am. I'm a bit of a bookworm and art. So then I went to, I did GCSEs and that, then went to college. Tried and tested university a good few times and kept dropping out. And I know that my boyfriend calls me, he's like, well, you're a bohemian, that's why. And I'm like, that's a really nice way of saying you just love quitting.
Oh, I love that. You're a bohemian.
He's like, well, you're a bohemian, aren't you? Because I've been talking about re-entering the world of work to like a proper contracted job. Maybe going back to an office. I don't know. It's just I've got a lot of free time now and I'm like, I want to do something. And he's like, yeah, you could do, but you're a bohemian, aren't you? And I'm like, yeah.
Oh, that's my new catchphrase when I kind of say I don't want to go and do that. I'm a bohemian.
You're just a bohemian. You guys just feel a little bit bohemian. I'm like, yeah, no, you're right. I am just a bohemian. Yeah, so I ended up getting a degree in interior design out of everything. I've always, because I've spoken at universities since. I gave a talk recently to the Loughborough University, which has got a really strong arts department. So they did their Queer History Month and they invited me to go and talk. And it's literally, they said, you've got, it's open mic. You've got the floor for an hour. So just kind of talk about your work, talk about, you know, everything. So I was like, okay. So it was this conversation kind of saying, right, well, I started off here and now I've ended up here. And how'd you get there? People want to know, how do you earn a living?
Absolutely.
Yeah. As an artist, how do you do that?
And that's it. And there's so many people in your position that are probably inspired by it and thinking, how do I do something similar? So that's why when it's not fully documented, people want to know, well, how did you do it?
How did you do that?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I started, so I finished the interior design degree, waited a hot minute, and then literally booked a one-way train to London and just thought, this is my next thing. I don't know what Liverpool can do for me now. So I got to London, I hit the ground running. Within a few months, I'd started working for Paul Smith, the menswear designer. I know there's another Paul Smith, isn't there?
They're everywhere.
There's a comedian, Paul Smith. Yeah.
Oh yeah, you went to see him, didn't you?
Yeah, we were watching him last couple of weeks ago now.
Where was that?
We went to Sheffield. Is my boyfriend, he trains with my boyfriend, so we travelled to Sheffield to watch him because there were no tickets left for up here, but he is so funny.
You loved him, didn't you?
Yeah, unbelievable. It was really, really good.
These are the conversations that I've had talking about
Paul Smith
and this Paul Smith. And I don't think we're talking about the same people.
Definitely not going to be the same conversation.
So we're talking like Paul Smith, the designer, because he was huge, wasn't he?
Menswear and now women's wear designer. So he also has a furniture collection. So I got hired as furniture ambassador in the Mayfair store that he just opened. And they had this beautiful show. The store's absolutely stunning. It's on Albemarle Street and they've got a showroom downstairs and it's just this big, gorgeous store. One of my first clients was Samuel L. Jackson. So this was in a few, and he was there to buy, what did he buy? He bought some artwork. God, Bambino, your breath stinks. I love you, but you are. He bought some artwork and do you know those real pinch me moments where you're just like, oh God, I'm not in Liverpool anymore.
I think I'd have gone to bits if I seen it.
I was shook at, and he made some jokes as well. He was like, he was very, very funny. And I was like, okay, but this feels like a good thing. And I don't feel like I would have had this in Liverpool. So maybe, I don't know, when you're younger as well, and you're in your early 20s, you kind of feel like everything's a bit water off a duck's back and you don't really worry too much.
Yeah.
I think now about moving to another city and I'm like, right, okay, I'll have to dip into savings and have to do this, that and the other and learn to drive and make sure that he's got, you know, support network if he needs minded.
He's got co-parents.
He needs co-parents. he's got his family. So back then I was just like, one-way ticket. I didn't even have anywhere to live. I just stayed in a mate's bed while she was in Turkey for 2 weeks. And it was like, all right, well, you'll figure it out, don't you?
But it works, doesn't it?
It works.
Kind of like...
If you could bottle that essence of like whatever it is, it's just like, I don't know, naive youthfulness. And you just go, yeah, go on, I'll have a shot of that.
As well, that's where like the opportunities come. So I think for you, like obviously if you wouldn't have gone down there, this wouldn't have been part of your story, and it makes your story even more like enriched. Go like, oh, wow, when this happened and that happened, because
absolutely,
it's incredible.
So my piece of advice now is just to say yes.
Yeah.
Say yes to the things that come up. Obviously, if it's a hard no, say no, that's absolutely not for me. But just say yes. Say yes to anything that feels like it's got potential behind her. And if it's making you feel a little bit, you know, like that pang of anxiety where you're like, oh God, that's you just growing. That's you thinking, oh God, here's an opportunity and I'm going to get tested for this right now.
Yeah.
So you do, every now and then you do, you have to do the London thing. But also I knew when I started doing drag as well alongside, obviously that had to come in somewhere. I was working for Paul Smith, and then I met my partner at the time who was an artist, and he kind of threw me back into the art world a little bit. So we put on exhibitions together. We rented a studio to make our own artwork. But I was like, there's something else in me. So while I was there, at this time period, I found a bar in Camden called Hair Upstairs that was a big queer left wing, like punk. It was where all the freaks went, you know, and I went there, and that's where I first saw the group of drag queens that I would end up working alongside.
Yeah.
There's the queen who ran the bar called Me. She did a drag competition called Not Another Drag Competition. It was very similar format to RuPaul's Drag Race. But just very lo-fi. And they did like one season a year. I'd never performed at this point, by the way. I didn't own a wig. I had very little makeup that I was just starting to test out to go like, okay, what could this kind of look like? And they put an open call out. Do you want to perform at this drag competition? And I got that feeling again. I was like, no, I can't do this. I remember sitting there in the kitchen, typing out the application. I was like, oh, I can't do this. I've never performed. But I hit send and I did it. And the next thing it came back saying, well, great, you come and compete in the heats. I ended up making my way right the way through that competition to the finals, where I got kicked out fourth, rightly so, because they were just like, well, someone's got to do better than you. You've never been on stage before. But it was them. I remember the first time, one of the weeks was stand-up comedy. And I was stood backstage. I had to go on last, so I had to watch everyone go ahead of me. And there's 12 other performers that go ahead of you. Or 11, I was the 12th. And they were about to invite me on next. And I remember standing backstage, and the exit was there. And the stage was there. And I was this close to just leaving. In full drag, I don't know what it was. Just walked home 6 miles. I was so nervous. And then they called me and I was like, no, you're just going to have to do it. Because, you know, I didn't want to read off lines, because that to me feels like, oh, you're unprepared. Yeah, just go out. And I'd written stuff. I knew what I was going to say. But sometimes when it still happens now, sometimes when the light hits and the mic's on and everyone's just staring at you and you're like, shit. I went out, did it. I won that.
Wow.
I won that night. I won, and it's like, okay, well, you had two options there. You could have just gone home, girl, and it never would have worked out for you.
Absolutely. So were you called Sister Sister then as well?
I was called Sister Sister then,
So I want to know.
Yeah.
Where did you buy your wig from?
AliExpress.
Yeah,
oh my God, you can tell.
So how did you invent yourself a Sister Sister then? Because I think that you... Obviously, I've seen your photos and things like that, but what made you choose that, the looks that you sort of went for?
It's a weird one. So because I've got older sisters who grew up on like Gem and the Holograms.
Yeah.
These like strong female cartoons, like She-Ra, these kind of... Gem and the Holograms was a really big one for me, and I didn't know it until I'd started painting my face, and I used to do this really obnoxious makeup and like... you know, the high 80s blush that goes from here right the way up the temple. But my thing was that, like, okay, so if I'm going to paint a big blue circle around my mouth, like for me, that was like, there's a spotlight. And if that's there, you've got to watch that.
Because that's actually your iconic look. When you think of sister, that's what photo I always...
It kind of became my logo. And that naturally happened as well. Because the very first time that I painted in drag, I painted this, I think it was green back then. But it was the big circle with the lips. And it was just like this iconic, oh, yeah, you say something, you pay attention to that, and it looks good. The blue on red as well, I think, just really works. So it was ticking all these boxes, and then I just did it the next time, and the next time, and the next time, and it just kind of stuck.
Would you have said that, because obviously, like, how old are you, Pip?
I'm 36.
So you're like an 80s baby like me. So when you were saying you were surrounded by all this feminine energy, your sisters, your aunties, they would have been going out into Liverpool in the 80s where it was just this vibrant city.
Oh, yeah.
So did you feel that there was like an influence of like your family members when they were out in like this amazing city in the 80s in Liverpool with influence over to the looks?
Definitely perms.
Yeah.
And my mother won't mind me saying that. Ginormous perm back in the day. But there's things like, I remember my mum had this belt. She's got a fabulous figure and she always has. And back when I was younger, she had this like, it was like big chunky gemstones set into like a gold chain belt. And you kind of, you'd wrap it round and then clip it on. And then the excess would just sort of like
trail down.
So you could so easily wear that now. And it's gorgeous. And it's stuck in my head. So anytime I see like a big jewel on a costume, I'm just transported straight back.
Yeah.
Did my mum keep it? Obviously not, because she loves throwing stuff away.
Oh, that would have been so vintage right
it's
now.
So, oh my God, she could have made it for herself. Such a bohemian. But it's things like that, yeah. And like, you know, big bright colours, just the things to me that stand out. Big shoulder pads, tiny little cinched waists, like big heels, big hair. Yeah, that's just, that is my drag.
It was just so symbolic when you look back, like women in their 80s, and you just think, even like...
Well, the power shoulder as well, that was the big statement, because men only wore suits back then. It was only until women came along in the 80s and put on a huge, you know, power shoulder and went, oh yeah, culturally something's switching up.
And you think as well, because obviously working for such a huge fashion brand like Paul Smith as well, you probably was immersed into that kind of fashion world in London. There must have been so much like creativity that you've seen within the fashion world that influenced sister.
I did see, I've always loved men's tailoring. Yeah. I think there's nothing sexier than a man in a well-fitted suit. Well-fitted being the key. There's nothing more of an ick than a man in a terribly fitted suit. But do what you need to do. And then the women's wear, obviously they wore blazers. Paul Smith always had, if you look on the inside, the linings of the suits, they have this silk lining. The colours of it are based on whatever season that's coming.
Okay.
So actually I was in, where were we? I was with my partner in, I think we were in Hebden Bridge, and we found a charity shop, and he loves wearing just men's tailored clothes anyway, and he found this Paul Smith suit, and I was like, oh my God, I recognize that. And he showed me the line and I was like, that's autumn winter 2015.
Wow.
Straight away, because I remember that from when I first started. Straight away, you transported back.
Yeah,
I knew that. And he bloody bought it and he got it tailored to fit him and he looks stunning in it.
Oh.
But yeah, I've always loved menswear tailoring. There's something, it's just classic,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I feel like it's just that masculine look, isn't it? And it's kind of...
It's hot.
We've lost it a bit, I feel, in today's society.
What do you like men to wear?
Oh.
Yours, your man.
A nice t-shirt, jeans.
Casual
bohemian. Smart.
You love that word now, don't you?
I love it. It's literally going to be like one of me. It's going to be my summer trending word.
Boho summer 2025.
Yeah, just very, very relaxed, casual, cool. But then I feel like I'm a little bit like that. Like I'm going to Italy this weekend and I bought like gazelles with little like just like soft crushed little suits, sunglasses,
ooh,
just like cool chic.
Oh, gorgeous. What's the temperature like in Italy at the minute?
It's said to be raining, so.
Is it?
I'll still do it fashionably.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, you have
fabulous,
to. Yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah. It's still gorgeous over in Italy anyway, isn't it? Where are you going?
Bologna.
Oh.
It's where my friends literally Googled and told me spaghetti bolognese was originated from. So I'm going to come home with carp face and stinking a garlic.
Yeah. Sounds like a good holiday.
So where did you have to then? Whereabouts is that? Do you know?
I've got a clue.
I've never heard of it and I love it. I always got Italy.
Yeah.
So I thought I might have heard of that, but I don't think I have.
Where do you go in Italy?
I've been a few places. My favourite is Sorrento, Positano, Capri. Stunning. Have you been?
I've been to Sorrento, yeah. And then, because I went travelling a couple of years ago. Sorrento is right at the bottom, is that right?
Yeah, on the Amalfi.
Yeah, and then we worked our way up and finished in Venice. Have you been to Venice?
No, I've not been there yet.
It's beautiful, isn't it?
I don't know whether... It's strange because I've spoken to people that have been and they're like, yeah, it was all right. I've spoken to people that have been and they were like, oh my God, Venice. Something really... That's my stomach. I'm starving. So hungry. I was like, I can't even blame that on the dog. Tummy's rumbling, by the way.
I'm normally burping. Are you? Yeah. It's like, there's a mad energy in this room.
It's like you're at home, aren't you? There's just something very gorgeous and like antique-y about Venice. Because obviously it's this floating island.
Yeah.
And the architecture's gorgeous. The galleries are beautiful. I loved it. I only spent 24 hours there. Just absolutely loved it. I can't wait to go back.
Just in and out and everything. Yeah. So take us back. So you won the competition.
So we're back in London, back in Camden.
Because obviously I always remember Superstar Boudoir. It was my favourite. Was Liverpool kind of bustling with that scene at this point? Or
Liverpool's always had a really, really strong strong connection to drag because of Paul O'Grady, Lily Savage.
Of course,
anyway.
Yeah. Loved Lily Savage.
Lily Savage. There's always been a really strong identity with drag in Liverpool. And there's the bars still have their, you know, resident drag queens and stuff. Yeah. The very first drag queen I ever saw was in a Liverpool gay bar. It will have been in G Bar.
Oh, my face.
Pink, that's since been Pink, R.I.P. Pink.
So there's Heaven now. Is Heaven a big one?
Heaven's a big one, yeah. We've got Lady Sian who does the quiz at the Lisbon.
Oh, I love the Lisbon.
I feel like I'm on a gay Titanic in the Lisbon.
It's so true.
Isn't it? It's absolutely gorgeous. Yeah, there always has been. But my roots with drag were started in London.
Yeah.
You know, in Camden. So I've always sort of classed myself as like a Camden queen.
It's so
really
arty though, isn't it, Camden? When you think of Camden, you think of Amy Winehouse and you just think raw.
Yeah.
Authentic talents.
Yeah,
there's no like kind of fabricated talent. It's just that rawness. People are very, very true to themselves there.
Yeah, a little bit punk, you know, which is really just freedom to kind of do whatever you want. Because I went a bit glam at certain points as well. And I think that was just because I wanted to see if I could. What happens if you polish it up a little bit?
Okay.
I've always had high standards anyway, but I think there's, you learn as you progress and if it's your own art form as well. Yeah. Painting on your face is one of the most cathartic things that you can do because it takes the makeup that you've got there and then just an hour and you can just perfect it. You guys will know, you love makeup.
Yeah.
It's just, you need to find new techniques and stuff. So that's when I kind of knew, all right, maybe I'm all right at this drag stuff. Go on. So I got a residency at that bar. So I started earning money then. Wow. And then you're like, oh, okay. It wasn't a lot. Do not get me wrong. It was not a lot of money. But you're getting paid for something that you genuinely love to do.
I bet you that as well. I bet you that was just like, because you were so into it, they just lit this fire in your belly.
Literally.
Bella, is that you?
It did, and I was given creative freedom. It was a comedy night. It was the Friday night hotspot. They said, you can do whatever you want. So I went away and I started writing these like comedy sketches. I grew up watching French and Saunders, Victoria Wood, all the really, the good British female comedians doing these comedy sketches. So I went away and I started, well, I'm going to start writing some comedy stuff. And there was a bit of stand-up in there. There was a bit of lip syncs, you know, still kept it kind of, you know, modern day drag. But I was allowed to do whatever I wanted. That felt amazing. And then kind of just went from strength to strength, started doing other bars and other venues and prides and stuff. But then within a year, excuse me, I decided that I wanted to move back to Liverpool and kind of take all those skills back with me and test the waters, see what I could do in Liverpool. instead. And then that's the beginning of 2019. So it was only a few months later that I applied for Drag Race.
Wow. And then what happened? Yeah. So you apply for Drag Race. What, like, do you go through audition processes? Is it quite like...
So you
grueling?
Have to, yeah, it is a long process. So you have to there's an expression of interest first. You have to say, you know, hi, I'm here. This is my name. This is where I am. This is what I want to do. Then they send you a list for points for a 10-minute audition tape that you have to film and put together. So it's like they want to see the personality bit. So a minute and a half of it is you out of drag. Then a minute and a half of it is you in drag. Then you have to do the snatch game, which is the celebrity impersonation for that episode. You have to do acting challenge. You have to do a lip sync. And all this is just filmed in my bedroom.
Wow.
It's really cringe to look back. And I looked so awful. But that was 2 years into doing drag. And I'm now like, what? I think it's seven or 8 years I've been doing it now.
Because to be fair as well, with that, if you've got to think, there's probably like queens that have been doing it for years and years and years, and it hasn't been a whirlwind experience. Like, because it's happened quite quickly for you.
It happened really quick for me.
So it's like it was inevitable that was meant to be your path.
It's funny because I've got a friend who's also my comedy partner as well. We both started drag around the same time. They said to me the other day, oh, I always knew you were going to get on Drag Race. And I was like, you could have told me. I had no idea. Because you're just doing your own thing, like fumbling about, trying to put on nights and you know, put on good nights, but also just make your act as good as possible. You don't think of like a long-term, I don't know, I wasn't thinking about a long-term thing anyway.
It's funny because we talk about this, don't we? We talk about like kind of how we're really happy for everyone. We don't compete against anyone because... Yeah. Everyone's path is already destined and wrote out for them. And it's very similar to yourself, how people automatically seen that was what your route was going to be.
It
just goes to show, isn't it? Like, by just not forcing something and allowing life to flow energetically as what's meant to be for you.
Yeah.
And that's what happens.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think there is one of the lessons to be learned, and I have to remind myself of this as well. You can sometimes just sit back and let it happen. Obviously, you have to put the work in.
Absolutely.
But you can just sit back and kind of, for me, it's always been the creativity thing. And if I didn't have that streak, I would never have started drag. I would never have, you know, been sat here today. But you do have to let, it's whatever you want to call it. Are you two quite spiritual?
Yeah. So I did a little mood board at the beginning of the year. I just literally put it back and like some things that are just unraveling this year, off that manifestation board.
Oh yeah.
And just believing that, you know, like what's meant for me will be. Stop controlling life's narrative and just work towards the goals and they will happen and put yourself out there.
So as long as you're putting the work in and you're doing all the right things, I think sometimes the rest of it slots into place.
Because I talk a lot about frequencies.
Oh yeah.
So I listen to a lot of like 432 HZ frequencies and stuff like that. And I just believe if your frequency is matching where you're meant to be, everything just flows energetically anyway.
Yeah.
So there's no reason to be kind of fretting that this isn't happening, that's not happening, because it will if it's meant to be.
It's funny, isn't it? Because I completely agree.
Yeah.
There's people that I think people kind of have their own frequencies as well, and it plays out through moods. There's people that I was hanging out with at a certain time, probably around the time that I was applying for Drag Race, that I no longer do, but their attitudes to me even being accepted onto it was, you've just got lucky. And I was like, looking back on it now, I'm thinking, well, it wasn't an accident. I didn't win the lottery. I worked very hard and did, you know, I'm talking about the successes as well. So some of the shows that I've done over the years, this is my success story to where I've been now. I also put up with a lot of crap and I did some shows that I really wish I hadn't. And I've worked with people that I probably shouldn't have tolerated and circumstances that you shouldn't. That's just sometimes a part of life, and that's what work looks like sometimes. There was no luck that played out in me making two audition tapes all together because I looked at the first one and thought, that's a bit crap. I'll book a day off work, eat into my own time, film the second audition tape, edit that, and then send that off. And that's the one that's going to get me on the actual show.
Yeah.
You've got a history of all your hard work that goes on for, you know, to go through so many producers and so many people and go, yeah, that's the one. Yeah, that's the one. And then RuPaul, the top dog, going, yep, that's the one.
Is that who chooses?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Oh, yeah. In LA. Yeah. You can see on the Vimeo audition tape, there's a map as well where where it's being viewed and how many times. So then the last one you see it being viewed
in
LA.
Like, darling,
in his gorgeous mansion. Yeah.
Fabulous mansion, sunset, and he's like, sister.
I'll take it. Yeah, it's wild. But I think, there are kinds of people that will have these certain attitudes to it. And you think, you know, okay, well, I no longer hang out with you. And I feel a lot better because of it.
Yeah. We've had these, haven't we? Over the last few episodes, I feel like this is a trend. Mm. Do you?
Yeah, absolutely. And I feel like, do you know what I call them? Energy vampires.
Energy vampires.
And it's so, so true. Yeah. And you try and bring them up, but I also think all this type of work, energies, frequencies, like spirituality, you've got to educate yourself into it. And when you do, you go down a rabbit hole, don't you? And you realise just how many successful people do this type of work.
Yeah.
This isn't just something that's come about just because the secret book come out. This has been going on for years and years and years, back to like ancestral times, that people are aware of this.
Yeah.
Like today, for instance, I call this my new year. It's the equinox. Mm. So it's the first day of the new astronomical year.
Today. Is it?
So anyone who's a spirit baby like us, today is really, and it's quite funny because when it comes to September and November, towards the end of the year, January, Feb, my mood is so low.
Yeah.
I get SAD.
Yeah.
So it just goes to show when you are aligned with all of this work. Come today, it's sunny first year for me, day of the year for me, and my mood's just springed.
So this is technically a 1st of January. Yeah. It's the start of the next 12 months. Yeah.
So you're still supposed to hibernate up until today, really.
Yeah.
But everybody jumps out on 1st of January. My New Year's resolutions.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And when actually it should be today that it's all set.
Yeah.
It's so fascinating.
It is. And I suffer a little bit from SAD as well.
Yeah.
I feel like I've very much been hibernating the last 6 months.
Yeah.
But because I'm self-employed and I've found ways to kind of make money without having to leave the house.
No, absolutely.
You can kind of do it in a way that's, I think this is the first time as an adult that I've thought, I'm going to lean into being at home.
Yeah.
Because my body's really, really craving it.
Yeah.
But I've been doing the yoga. I've been doing, I've been going for runs when I want to. I would say I'm doing the Liverpool Half Marathon on Sunday.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much. Tell me that at the finish line.
If I wasn't in Italy, I'd have come and supported my love.
I'll let you know how I get on.
Absolutely. I'll follow the journey.
Thank you very much. It'll be a long one. I'll probably finish by the time you get back.
Literally out of breath. With an inhaler.
Hello.
Thinking this isn't bohemian.
Yeah, I'm not looking very bohemian now, am I? I'm just sweating, darling. Yeah, that was kind of, I started doing running last year. I actually had an operation when I was 12 years of age.
Okay.
The joint in my ankle fused together.
Mm.
I went to Alder Hey. They kept me as a patient because they wanted to figure it out and they ended up operating on it. And it was a kind of 50-50. It can be a total success or you could end up with arthritis.
Oh.
Ended up with arthritis. I got told when I was 12, by the time you're 18, you'll be in a wheelchair.
Really?
Wow.
And I held on to that.
Can I ask Pip, when that was said to you, did that kind of trauma you growing up thinking that that was the inevitable for you?
I felt like that was going to be my life. So job opportunities and things, 12 years old is when you start high school.
Absolutely.
Everything I looked forward to then, right, you need to do GCSEs in some line of business where you need a desk job. You're going to have to be able to sit down and do this. And my mum did that overly protective mother thing as well, where she was like, I want to be supportive, but I want to kind of guide you into doing something that's going to be a safe venture.
Yeah.
And a safe way to make money for you because you're going to be in a wheelchair.
Wow.
that obviously that time period came and went, and I just carried on walking. I remember going for a checkup when I was about 25, and I was like, can I just ask? And the doctor was like, we can only apologize for whoever told you that, because obviously it's not that bad. So it's a little shot in the arm, to be honest. That I started running as a casual thing. I run with a group called the Front Runners. Hello, if you're listening.
Hi.
they are they're a queer running group in Liverpool, and some of them have ended up just being very good friends. It's mostly about community, things like that. The running's just the thing that we do while we're all together. So I'll be running with them. I don't enjoy it. I don't love running, but I don't really like exercise. It's the dopamine you get afterwards, and it's the way that it makes you feel afterwards. Yeah.
Do you know what I love that you've just brought up there as well, Pip? So obviously, you know, kind of drag and like obviously like your running club. This was your community, and we talk about this, me and Nick, a lot. So I was always looking around me last year before I started doing all this work, thinking people are so down and depressed and what is it that we've lost in like today's society? And then I went to Africa. And Africa changed my life for this reason. And I was just like, I was looking around and a lot of people saying, was it super sad and everything? And I was like, the first day I got there, it was a culture shock. And yeah, it did really upset me. But the rest of my trip, I was so happy because I was surrounded with such positive kind of like outlooks in life. And I remember speaking to like one of the coordinators and I said, you're so happy, like it's not like this back in like the Western world in the UK. And they were like, we say this all the time when Western volunteers come over, everyone's really mean to each other and they've got this really low mood. So I said, what is it? I said, please tell me what is this sparkle that yous have got because yous are so happy. And he basically said, we've still got community.
Yeah.
So when we would be driving through the streets, there'd be like the old shops and everything, and it'd be like 40, 50 people, or like elder generations, mums, dads, uncles, the kids, the babies, all playing around. And I understood what he meant. He was like, they've still got that community. We've lost that. I'm just going to go next door to get some milk or some sugar. It's kind of like, it's too embarrassing. You don't go and ask your neighbour for that. Or
it's if you even know your neighbours these days as well, isn't it?
That's true.
Come out your house sometimes. And well, I've lived where I live was my mum and dad's house. So we still live in that same area. But my old house before that, I think I better spoke to my neighbours twice. Because you don't, you're just in, you're like tunnel vision, don't you? You've got to go and drop your kids off at school, then you've got to get work, and you've not got time for anybody else.
I couldn't tell you what my neighbours to the right even look like.
Really?
Yeah.
And it's so sad, isn't it, when you think about it? Yeah. But then to know that, do you feel like that's kind of, that was your community, it kept you going?
Yeah, yeah. And
especially
I think
around like people who were kind of, oh, you can't do that. That's not for you. And that's not like, how do you get that strength?
It's also why it kind of upsets me as well. Because like we get the drag community is, they are ferociously supportive of each other because we understand that's our queer bubble.
Yeah.
And I think particularly right now, throughout the world in politics, my community is trying to be broken up and split apart. And demonized and made to seem like they are the wrong, that what they're doing is wrong and who they are is wrong. When our queer community turns its focus on the right things, we can get stuff done. And that goes right the way through history. You know, one example, the Stonewall riots.
Yeah.
When we put our focus to the right thing, we can start to shift energy and make a real positive change. The flip side of it is, sometimes when they've got too much time on their hands, they can forget all that and just go, oh, well, actually, I'm going to drag you down. And there's like this infighting, which just, it's so, I don't know whether it comes with age and you can become a bit wiser. You can sort of take a step back and look at it and just go, what the hell are you, what are you doing?
Yeah.
What are you doing? This is insane. I got trolled off the back of the Drag Race show.
Oh, wow.
But because we were in lockdown, I took it really hard because that was my only world at the time. You'd wake up, you'd check your phone, you couldn't go out and speak to people. That became how you communicate. So one episode, you'd do badly or you'd say something to the more popular queen and then everyone just starts coming in at you and they're just like, you know, the typical, the death threats, the personal insults, all of that. So at the time it was gross and it affected me really deeply. I wrote a Guardian article about it, just kind of like discussing what, because at the time I was like, what can I do? You can't fight with them in the comments as much, as much as you want to. Because they're not there for that. They're not there for an open discussion. They're there to just insult you and then just close the phone and just leave it. That's it. That's the it's like a stimulant that they get. I thought, okay, well, I'll try and relate to them. I'll write a day in the life of what my average day now looks like. I'm sat at home, I'm literally typing. I wake up, I have a nice coffee, I open my phone, 3 death threats. Here's why. And then it's the story of I'm on Drag Race. You're watching TV that was filmed over 7 months ago, almost a year ago at this point, because at the time of airing, you're watching something that played out in a TV studio.
Yeah.
In a controlled setting almost a year ago. And you're sending me a message now to tell me to off myself because you don't like the way that I spoke to someone else who, and we're both sat there in massive wigs and heels. And it's like, this, you understand this isn't real life.
Because, like, how did you deal with that, Pip? Because it's so, I love that this has come up because we got it a little bit, like, last, this is how this podcast come, like, to surface, because what we kind of experienced on a very minute, probably, compared to yourself. And it was talking about us, our eyebrows, the colour of our skin, our tan, just very, like, and I just thought, wow, like, it's incredible why they feel, I still get inboxes where they've screenshot pictures and started to chop my eyebrows off and send what they think I should look like.
Oh, no, oh God.
And you just
your fans.
And me fans. So I just love heart them back now, as if to say, I love that. But you know what? It's cool. But like, I remember watching a documentary with Molly May, and I remember her saying when she went into Love Island, she handed a phone over to her dad and basically said to her dad, whatever you do, just don't go into the inbox. And then I watched them with Kim Kardashian, and they make a little bit of a joke about it, and they just say post and ghost. Because, like, obviously I've never been on a world kind of renowned TV show like yourself, but that must have been to get death threats in. That must have, I just don't understand people's mentality, and you're a human being.
I think to understand a troll is, and I don't think they're that, let's be real, I don't think they're that clever. Yeah. I don't think they're very, very smart people. I've always said, and I still maintain this, there's no such things as trolls in real life, or the very few and far between, because what they type with their thumbs, they would never say to your face in a million years. And that gives me some kind of comfort to know, right, okay, well, it's just kind of, it's you just sat at home in you know, your Mingan pajamas.
They're internalising everything that they feel, aren't
it's
they?
Got like, it's got nothing to do with me. Yeah. It's got nothing to do with you. It's got nothing to do with you. Whatever it is that they're saying, they're just acting out. They're just saying things because it's going to give them a little bit of attention. I always find it strange as well, because with drag queens on Drag Race, you get one first impression. Yeah. And this is why social media is great. You get to communicate, and I can communicate back to you. And if you love what I do, yes, I love to hear that. And I love to have you in my little community. If this is your first impression to speak to someone and just tell them that, you know, that X, Y, and Z, or they hate your outfit, or they just hate you in general, is that your lasting impression? Is that really what you... And are you a fan? Are you a fan of the show?
That's it.
Because RuPaul says at the end of every episode, you know, it's got loads of catchphrases. Everybody say love.
Yeah, absolutely.
If you and can't love yourself, how the hell are you going to love somebody else? And then you pick up your phone and go and kill yourself. It makes no sense.
Yeah.
It makes no sense to me.
Like, do you get support, like, when you come off these big, like, TV shows, it's like mental health support to say, like, look, obviously this can happen? Because obviously I don't know if RuPaul's got the same kind of, like, Love Island, for instance. There's so many people that come off that show and there's, like, really negative effects that it has on them.
Yeah.
Some people obviously take their lives and stuff like that.
Of course.
And I'm just like,
this is where it can get to. Like, let's not, you know, we don't need to muddy the waters about it. These are the real effects that it can have on people. And I think it doesn't bear thinking about mm-hmm. how far it can actually get to you, because you don't know what people are going through day to day.
Yeah.
And that could be their final straw. There was, I was given counselling and therapy yeah. afterwards, and I went to stay with my mum for a little bit, but that's how bad it was. I had to go move in with my mum because I was like, I don't really know. Also, we were in lockdown, so I couldn't just like, you know, go yeah. and see friends or whatever. So it was really, really, really bad. The education that it gave me, though, and the kind of how much you reflect on it, and you do have to reach conclusions, because in a warped way, I'm kind of glad that it happens, because I'm like, oh, well, I'm kind of pretty much set up ready for anything to do with online stuff.
It makes you gives you the strength there that you just think.
It's a bit of armor, but, you know, I also had a very good, stop breathing.
I know,
but a Wrigley's. I will take you the vet. I had a really good support network around me as well. And I think without them, I wouldn't have been able to pull myself through it. But I remember at the time, my sister, we used to have a really old Shih Tzu called Elvis. He was like 18. He didn't have an eye. He had no tooth in his head. It was like everything. He was just riddled with arthritis. But the thing that we kept him alive. We just kept him around the house because he still had a really good appetite, and he was fine.
Yeah, of course.
His body was just like, he was about to go any minute now. And I remember I'd moved back into my mum's. I'd been offered citalopram from the doctor. They were like, just take it off, take a weight off your mind, kind of. It'll make you a bit of a zombie for a little bit. So I remember I was 2 weeks into taking that, and I was feeling a little bit lighter. And I always say now, if there's citalopram is a antidepressant.
Yeah.
So I suggest it. I take it now, even though I'm not
just to be calm.
Depressed, just to kind of, because I take it alongside propranolol as well, which my God, I wish I'd been offered propranolol years ago. Oh, but it's my saving grace. So I'd started taking this citalopram, and Elvis the dog, his health one day it just started failing. So we were like, right, okay, we'll take him.
Yeah.
Now's the time. So my two sisters drove, and they had the injection administered, and then they came back with this little body. It was just this tiny little gorgeous thing. And, you know, my mum and everyone was like mourning him in this really respectful way that you do for an old dog. Everyone was really upset and crying. I couldn't feel a thing because I was on this antidepressant. So I'm in the garden just to just chucking him into this pit. Didn't feel a thing, so I had to mourn him in my own way. So citalopram, it did work. It did work for me.
Because like there's a big famous queen. It was on Drag Pullet, was it Vinny?
Who?
She
Scouse.
The queen that's just passed away recently.
Oh, Vivian. Vivian.
Sorry. And does it... I see a lot going round about Vivian lately. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? And it's...
our queen, the Viv. It's funny because the impact that she's had on not just Liverpool, but the world as a drag performer it's going to go on forever and ever and ever. Everyone's heard of the Vivian. She had an incredible career. She was incredibly talented. Really, really good energy about her, and it's such a shame. It will always be when someone passes too young. It's just such a shame. But I don't know whether you saw the it's come out now that it was due to a heart attack from ketamine, mm-hmm. the recreational drug use.
It's this drug at the minute. It's so rife amongst younger generations. And
I think we're in an epidemic of
we were saying this
drug use.
And I feel like it's an epidemic of drug use because the way people are feeling and the effects of social media, the comparisons. Yeah. So their outlet is drugs and drink. Not knowing that it's the devil.
You think it's making them feel better in the moment, don't they? But obviously when you come back to reality, the problems are still there, what you've been dealing with. And like with we were saying about the trolling and things like that. I find that we spend so much time trying to understand mm-hmm. these trolls, and we're having a detrimental effect on ourselves in the moments of we can't control them.
Yeah.
So you've sort of got to let them be a troll.
Yeah.
Because it's an expectation I always find that if we expect something from someone and it doesn't happen, mm-hmm. you're disappointed. So if we expect all these trolls to think how we think, we're getting so mad with every single one of them because they're like, why are you not understanding what we're trying to get across? Mm. But if you don't have the expectation, you don't have them feelings towards
them. That's true.
And you can sort of let it bypass. I mean, that's just something that I've sort of learned. And if I could pass that on to anybody in regards to any trolling, I mean, we laughed about and joked about ours, didn't we? Because, you know, we all deal with things different. But that could have been to someone else and it could have had a massive effects on them.
Yeah, yeah.
Where we've come on and took it in a positive light, I think, haven't we?
What we've done, we've created something out of it to help others because we knew, for me, if that would have happened 6 months ago when I was really, really at my lowest, I didn't know I was at my lowest, by the way. I thought I was okay. I was in fight or flight. I was out drinking constantly, not knowing that the state that I was in, my body was so, like, tense. Would I have handled it the way I have now?
Yeah.
Completely not. Whereas I feel like because we've been on this little journey, this was like our outlet. It was like we've been through it, like I say, on a minute scale compared to what you have. But we did something good with it. And it was like, do you know what? Let's do a platform and give people something to come on and say, do you know what? I feel like this daily too, because so many people are struggling with it and not realising you're not alone.
Community,
and that's exactly what it is again, isn't it? It's what we're missing because I believe social media, although it portrays it's a community, it's a fabricated community. Yeah. No one's really there to be happy for you.
Yeah.
Whereas when you take it back, remove that, you've got to socialise again. You've got to come together again because we haven't got this online platform where we feel, oh, I belong to something that we don't really belong to. It's just something that people are just showing. It's like your online reel of your life, isn't it? But it's only the good things that you show.
Yeah.
And I feel like what we've been doing when we've been so vulnerable with these clips, people are like, oh, wow, this exists. People are allowed to be vulnerable. Yeah. It's allowed.
I think that's a tonic as well. People love the raw, unedited backstories of successful people.
Absolutely.
Like yourselves. So
Instagram, I find at the minute, because I do YouTube, obviously. YouTube is, even though it's the same thing, social media, you feel like you can air your problems without being judged. That's why people don't do it on Instagram, because I think there's so many negative things that go on Instagram. Yeah. But yet I would film the day in a life and put it on YouTube and not worry one bit about what's going to be said about that. Now, if I was to put that video on Instagram, I'd then think, oh, what are people going to think about that? I just find that it's too, even though it's social media, it's two different platforms.
It's like TikTok as well, isn't it?
Like, yeah.
And I remember speaking to my marketing company and they were saying, Instagram's your glossy Vogue. That's where everything's glossified. It's kind of, you go to TikTok, it's a little bit more softer. Like, and then you're saying YouTube. Like, I don't really do much YouTube, but Nick's fantastic on it.
I love YouTube.
We kind of, Nick's, what is it that you eat constantly? Egg custards. And she's just so raw with it. And it's my little thing that I always, me and Nick laugh about it. Do you know what I mean? But she's so just her and authentic and soft with YouTube that it's just so nice to see.
Do you know, I wonder if it's because YouTube, you can obviously have longer videos on there. There's like an attention span that you can sit there and watch. Because I go onto YouTube when I want to watch something. You don't go onto Instagram to watch something, do you? So it is, they are two completely different platforms, and the way that people log onto them is obviously going to be completely different as well.
Yeah.
I've got a really serious question though. Where's your favourite egg custard from?
Ooh.
Tesco.
Is it?
Yeah.
Cheeky Tesco.
Tesco. Pack of two. Well, pack of two or four. I sometimes get the pack of four and eat the full lot.
Suggestion one.
But do you know, my friend bought me some from Marks and Spencer and there was a bit posh. They looked like the edging weren't as crinkly. It was quite like a la carte looking. And I thought, they're going to be delicious. And I tried it and it was nice. But Tesco, unreal. I could eat 20 a day. I'm not joking.
I actually need to taste one.
Well, your... Oh, Donatas. Are they Italian? Or they might be Portuguese?
Are they the things that the little roly things?
No, they look like... They're Portuguese, actually. No, you're going to Italy.
Do you mean what you get in Nando's? them cakey things with like, it looks like an egg custard, but it's like an orange tart.
I think so.
Yeah, they sell them in Nando's.
Do they?
Nando's is Portuguese, isn't it?
Oh, well, that'll be why.
Yeah.
So they are, I think it's a Portuguese egg custard tart.
Yeah, so it looks exactly like it. It's just got a different filling. I've never tried one, by the way, so it could be completely different. But
I end up addicted to Nando's ones.
I've not had Nando's for a few weeks. I can't keep eating them. It's terrible. I just get my calories in on them.
It's just great calories. Though, like, and you just see Nick be so raw with herself there. Do you know what I mean?
He's on my Instagram story. He's got another one.
I had to get a sponsorship deal with my
Oh, you need to.
So let's wrap it up. We always do a little thing, Pip, at the end, and we call it our weekly wine.
Ooh.
So let's have a, I'm going to, who wants to go first?
My weekly wine. Well, yeah, go on, I'll go first. I'm going to weekly wine. I can't change it, obviously, because I have got work and I've still got these things I've got to come and do. But Andrew's on a course this week, Monday to Friday, 9 till 4, and he usually picks kids up, like I was saying earlier. And I've really put on my mum this week for Avmaggie so that I could still got work, I could still come here. And I knew about this course a couple of weeks ago, so really I thought I shouldn't have worked as much. I'm expecting my mum to have her as much, but she loves having her. It's just that I feel guilty. I feel mum guilt.
Yeah.
Aww.
So, yeah, that's my weekly wine this week, to be more organised, should I say, going forward.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not texting my mum now before. I am so sorry, but please, can you have her again tomorrow? She's like, it's fine, but I feel bad.
I
need to be more organised.
And do you know what? I'm going to pick up from that, from my weekly wine, actually. Mine's, it's a wine, but it's also a positive. And I said to my friend yesterday, I'm going to cut my hours and compress them back to what they was, because I feel like after watching Adolescence, I was like, I've not been as present in Cody's life as I want to be. And it needs to be that with the first half of my week is about being a mum. Do you know what's super, super cute? I said to him, I picked him up from school because I've been really conscious about this since watching the programme. It's really hit hard. And I said to him, I know you do football all the time and stuff with daddy, but mummy wants to be like a cool mum, and can we do something together? Should we try and do like skiing lessons and stuff like that? So me and you have got something. And I don't know where he must have been watching this from, or whether I've just shown him it or something. And he replied back to me and he went, mummy, probably don't want to do skiing lessons because I've got so much football and boxing on. And I was like, okay. So I took it as if like my expectation, thinking, oh God, I'm not this good. Mummy doesn't want to hang around with me. He wasn't thinking that.
No.
And he said to me, but mummy, you are a cool mum. Just keep doing your interviews.
Oh.
And it broke my heart. Oh. But you know, I got out of that car and I just thought, you know what? Sometimes you think you're not doing a good job, but he's actually picking up on things.
What you are doing.
And it made my heart so full that I thought, okay. But it also made me realise I'm making the right decision by going back to Thursday and Fridays in the clinic, having that first half of the week just to be mum again.
Yeah.
Admin at home.
And
doing
you.
Podcast,
you
and
need,
being
and
me.
And just you. I feel that. You just, life just takes over, doesn't it?
It does. Yeah. So I think that's my weekly wine. Like you say, not let life take over, Nick.
Yeah.
My weekly wine then. I think I need to stop moaning about, like even talking about the half marathon. I'm like, oh, I hate running. I'm actually in a really privileged position to have, you know, a fully working body, you know, breathing exercises down, and the ability to actually compete in something like a half marathon, because years ago some doctor told me that I might not be able to.
Absolutely.
And now I can. And I'm really grateful. Also on that note, we are raising money for Sahir House as part of the Front Runners as well. Might be able to link.
Please, we would love you to.
Here. Yeah. If I think they'll still be accepting donations after this episode comes out as well. Sahir House are an incredible charity in Liverpool that work with the LGBT community.
Perfect.
And yeah, they're always looking for a bit of extra cash on the side to do our projects.
Please send us the link. I'll donate. There'll be obviously a lot of people out there, because I feel like Liverpool is a community when it comes to fundraising.
Yeah.
We've just seen it.
I'm working on Wigan.
I have got to finish it though, not with that weekly wine, because I think so many people out there will be like, you've had sister on and you haven't asked them you know, obviously a lot of women watch our show and they're probably thinking, tell us one beauty tip that we can take away and finish the episode on, because I feel like it'll be a good one.
Okay, all right, go on then. One beauty tip. I would say you can have your toners, you can have your moisturizers, mm-hmm. you can have, you know, all these elixirs. Cabinets can be absolutely stocked with that. The one thing that I use to wash my face, and it gets rid of absolutely everything, and it costs you nothing, Dove Beauty Bar.
Oh.
Costs a pound. And that will it cuts through my thick makeup, all the glue, everything. Yeah. And I've always sworn by that.
Oh, I'm going to have to try that.
It's a natural astringent as well, so it closes your pores naturally. I still use toner and stuff
afterwards.
Well,
yeah, because if you think, because I have washed my face with that before now, you know, in like the bath, and yeah. your face goes super tight. Do you know, it's funny because I'll give my little beauty tips. So everyone, when I used to do pageants when I was younger, and the best eye cream, we talked about piles on the first episode, so I'll have some somewhere. But you know, the best eye cream, and it's a huge like pageant secret, is hemorrhoid cream,
I've heard about this.
For tightening that area.
Crazy.
Yeah. That and hairspray on your bikini knickers so they didn't ride up your bum.
Oh my God.
So if you're in a little beach club in the summer, hairspray on your bum.
Where am I going? I'm flying into Malaga next week.
Nice. Ooh, a gig?
A little tonic for after me half marathon. I'm going with the gay runners. Oh God, I love it.
The yin and the yang. You have to have the balance. Exactly. You're so bohemian.
Yeah. It'll be my first sober holiday as well. So
okay, have you not been drinking?
I've not been drinking, no.
And what was that choice? Just
Started last year, yeah. I just don't think alcohol's good for me.
Yeah, a lot of people are feeling like this. Yeah, I'm very similar. I'll have the odd one. Don't get me wrong, this weekend I've not drank since November. You just don't drink at all, do you, Nick, at the minute?
No, not really.
I had a little drink this weekend because I went to like a women's event and I had a baby shower. So I let loose this weekend, but yeah, I'm very similar. I've kind of really took a little...
There's more to life.
Yeah.
There absolutely is, yeah. And I for a personality type like me as well, to say, no, you can't have that is the worst thing ever. Yeah. So I had to learn to say, get it out of your kind of system for now, just naturally turning to, I'll take that. And say, no, I'll have a soft drink for now. But if something comes up, I've got a birthday in September. Absolutely. I've got weddings coming up.
Are you a Virgo?
I am a Virgo.
I'm a Virgo too.
Are you? Yeah, I never knew that about you.
I should have known, yeah.
Oh, that makes sense.
Little Virgo babies.
Oh, wow. What date?
24th.
Oh, so you're on the cusp?
Yeah, I'm a Leo Virgo cusp.
You are, yeah. I'm second.
Oh, yeah. So you're kind of very similar to me because then...
But I slept in a week. I was a week late.
Oh, so you had to go the year behind?
I was supposed to be a Leo. Yeah. I think I was supposed to be a Leo. On the cusp of that.
You'd have been a cusp like me, probably, if you're the second and the 24th. Yeah, you probably would have been my birthday.
Yeah, yeah.
Ooh.
And my mum's is on the 24th of August. My nan's was on the 26th of August. And I was supposed to be sandwiched in between.
That's super, super crazy. Because my
mum's wedding band and my nan's wedding band.
Oh, they're my nan and mum's as
Are they?
Oh, we're twins.
Oh, that's so strange. But do you know what's crazy? The only piece of jewellery I don't take off.
Me too. And what's crazy about that as well, Pip, I'm the 24th of August. And my cousin Nikki's the 26th of August.
No.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a bit spooky, isn't
it?
Isn't it?
I love that, though.
Oh, yeah, I get that.
Aligned with numerology.
Are we? Oh, wow.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much, honestly. I could chat to you all day, couldn't we, Nick?
Yeah, it's just been a pleasure. And I love getting to know your background because I didn't really know anything about you. So thank you so much for giving me that opportunity.
Absolutely.
Thanks for allowing me on. Yeah. Keep reaching for the stars because I really do believe there's so much more to come and I can't wait for our listeners to get to know you and obviously watch you grow even more. You're an inspiration to Liverpool, honestly. So thank you so much.
Good luck on your marathon.
Oh, God, yeah. I feel like I'm going to need that, yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.